Ruby Rubenheimer. Graham, hello. Are you there? Can you hear us? Please be there. Please be there. Graham's gone. Has he disappeared?
No, he's there.
He's there, isn't he? Hello.
Hey, can you hear me loud and clear?
Loud and clear. Oh, it's going terribly well this morning, GR. It's going so well. How are you?
I'm so sorry. Yeah, I'm getting you. I was going to say that if you want to use a nice nickname, you know, sometimes in our family, it's kind of like a nickname that always gets handed down. Roby.
Roby.
It's kind of like just a very easy thing to get. It's a get out of jail free card that you don't have to say, you know, the poor man's Oppenheimer every single Sunday.
You don't need to tell me once. Roby it is. I mean, I don't know why I struggle with it. I can't get the clicks, Graham. That's what it is.
SJ for me is easy. I mean, you know, Sarah Jane Macaulay King. That is regal. It is so regal.
Do you know what Macaulay means? Macaulay in...
No, please enlighten me. It means?
It actually means coward.
What?
Yeah, true story. I know. Thanks to my pity.
Well, I mean, Robenheimer means guild of thieves. So,
no, a coward and a thief. Oh, I love that.
Well,
does it really mean that? Guild of thieves. That's brilliant, though. You should get a crest.
Well, I mean, within the context of South African colonialism, I mean, let's just move right onto the topic.
Shall we? Please, can we? Let's park that there and move on. But speaking of Guild of Thieves, Zuma, right.
Listen, if you think that there's a job, right, in South African history that requires the absolute biggest salary, it has to be probably former President Jacob Gedleyihlekisa Zuma's personal assistant or secretary. Can you imagine how difficult that job must be to understand when and which dates that man has to be in certain parts of the country,
which court cases
he's busy with, which political rallies he's supposed to go to. It must be a minefield of note. The latest being, SJ, is that, of course, you'll see on the front page of the Eyewitness News and various other news publications this morning, is that a letter has now come out from ANC Secretary General Fikile Mbalula, which, of course, Eyewitness News has seen, which basically puts a halt to the scheduled upcoming Tuesday appearance for Zuma before the ANC's internal disciplinary committee. Now, what's this got to do with? Of course, it's his whole forming of the Mkhonto we Sizwe or MKP party, which obviously will be contesting key strongholds, for example, like KwaZulu-Natal.
Because, I mean, Zuma is technically still a member. Sorry.
A stronghold.
Sorry, Graham. Zuma is technically still a member of the ANC, right?
Yeah, so this is now the blurry lines where they currently are sitting at the moment, because they need to put a final sort of bow on this story, so to speak. You know, he wants to be in Parliament, of course, again at the same time, and that's a whole separate matter as well, ASJ, is that, you know, will he still be allowed to sort of run in these elections under the MK party? Or, you know, CASAC is joining as a friend of the court in that matter, as the IEC is now testing, you know, whether or not he can stand for, you know, re-election as a member of Parliament. You know, so that's a whole separate case. This is why I'm saying that, you know, you need somebody like a very, very good secretary or a PH that can really tell us exactly the status of every move that Zuma is going to be making so that we as the media can stay well informed. Of course, that case before that the Electoral Commission of South Africa is bringing to the Constitutional Court is also now becoming very complicated, SJ. Zuma has submitted his own application to the court for the recusal of six of the judges, because the very fact that he was brought for the court beforehand, of course, was the contempt of court case that he had spent some time in prison for. However, of course, there was the whole remission that he had received from President Cyril Ramaphosa. Now he wants, Zuma says he, there's some judges on the Concord that can't hear the matter, and so there's a conflict of interest. Of course, Zondo, the Chief Justice Raymond Zondo himself, you know, is not sitting in on the matter. So putting that aside, going back to the ANC matter, you know, the ANC feels, and this is within analysis at the moment, SJ, that, you know, perhaps having him before the ANC disciplinary committee at the moment won't be the best move. You know, it won't be the best look for the ANC because it could lead to a potential clash of supporters outside Luthuli House in the central center of Johannesburg. And that could, you know, perhaps ill favor you know, the ANC's look ahead of, you know, the polls on the 29th of May, especially when it comes to KwaZulu-Natal, because that is going to be such, you know, a contested hotbed province. Although that Zuma's not really vying for that particular province, as it seems he wants to have a hot ticket to be a member of parliament. Can you imagine that? Still, it is a province that the MK party is hoping to really, really get a lot of the votes so that Zuma at the end of the day and the rest of that party could, you know, enter these elections on a strong footing. Whatever it may be, though, SJ, all of this conversation in the run-up to the elections themselves, you can imagine that this is going to be a major chapter in all political textbooks for many, many years.
I'm fascinated. I was listening to an interview the other day on 702 with Bongani Bingwa. He had two legal experts, I mean, like, you know, two of the greatest legal minds in the country, debating over whether Zuma could even legally stand as, if it got to that, would he be able to be president again? And they were kind of ripping apart the constitution. It was fascinating. And sure. And honestly, neither of them seemed to really come up with a definitive answer. Ay, ay, ay. Scary stuff.
Absolutely.
I think it's
too early, SJ. Yeah. It's too early for us to even go down those corridors.
It is.
I mean, we would have to, you know, get our local handy, like, Concord books out to really try and wrangle that idea, because I don't have an answer for you, and I don't think many people do.
You know what worries me, though? Remember with the elections in which Donald Trump finally managed to get enough votes and became president, and nobody had, everyone was saying, oh, no, he'll never do it. He'll never do it. It's not going to, you know, it's a lot of sort of filibustering and pomp and da-da-da-da. And then you sort of watch, staying up late at night to watch the states just going red, red, red. And then
he didn't get the popular vote, remember?
Right, right. You see.
Got the popular vote. And you so see. People didn't understand the electoral college at the time.
But I'm just saying, we can't be caught on the back foot here. We need to be knowing who's who in the political zoo. We need to know what we can potentially expect. Speaking of what we can potentially expect, it has been the most glorious few days here, a couple of weeks at least, with no load shedding, Graham, which has just been marvellous. Of course, this, we have to look at this through, I don't know if it is being cynical or realistic, to say, sure, but then what happens on the 30th of May? What does happen on the 30th of May?
Absolutely, absolutely. Even my mom was saying to me, she was like sending me a message. She's like, is it because of these elections? And of course, that is just going to be the question that's in everybody's minds about whether or not the system is sort of back to a sustainable, I mean, touch wood sort of level of electricity generation, right? And I think it's very important to stay on top of the story because, you know, in times of crisis, we give like rolling updates in the press, right?
Right.
But then as soon as things are like better for a while, you don't hear about it for a while. And then when it comes back again, people want to know about why you didn't hear about it in that specific time. Well, let me just quickly say this, right? If you didn't hear it this week, you know, the electricity minister does sometimes sound like a stuck record, but Dr. Jose and Soramahopa did come out and say that the end of the rolling level of power cuts is, quote unquote, within touching distance, and that Eskom's now, as of this last week, it's achieved an energy availability factor, which is you know, how robust the system is to actually provide electricity. It's now hovering at around 65%, which is what I got on my business, you know, exam and matric. Okay, but given that, which is quite fantastic, he does seem that, you know, Medupi Unit 4, it's an 800 megawatt unit, Coburg Unit 2, it's 980 megawatts, and then Kusile Unit 6, which is also another 800 megawatts, that this is all over the next 6 months, it's going to bring in around 2,580 megawatts back onto the system. Now, given the context, and that we haven't had, you know, these power cuts for what, more than 30 days now, 35 days, so to speak, that given this, you know, promise ahead of the polls, it looks a little, I mean, it looks a little concrete because these are within the projections that we've been expecting for quite a long time. And so the goals of bringing Medupi and Coburg have sort of been within these, you know, the minister's energy plan for some time. So these have been projected, and he has given us rolling updates on that. And added to that, people may have missed the story this last week, SJ, is that Ramakgopa was in Richards Bay, and there was the unveiling of a gas-to-power project, which is also going to be assisting within the grid. And that's expected to bring around the equivalent of around 2,000 megawatts. And potentially 5,000 megawatts in time at the Richards Bay Industrial Development Zone, this gas to power project, which is apparently one of the biggest and only on the continent. So that in itself is also something potentially to look forward to. Okay, given in the context of South Africa, we always know that corruption and, you know, poor service delivery, those things can manifest into stifling major projects down the line. But at this rate, I mean, it is kind of fair to say I've still got my cynical cap on that at least it looks like we're heading in the positive direction. The minister is due to give an energy plan update to the press tomorrow, SJ. So that will be one to watch on and listen
Listen,
on,
I'm
I
with
would.
you, I'm with you on the side of cynical, and for the reason that you sort of alluded to at the start of this story is that when things kicked off again with load shedding, and when we started going into the stage fours and fives and whatnot, and it becomes a conversation that just dominates the media. We have on this station where there are constant updates. We are constantly speaking to energy experts. At no point have I ever heard an energy expert, whether it be Chris Yelland or anybody else, saying, no, we'll probably be out of the woods in a year or so. Never. Their forecast has always been a long-term forecast of the next 10, 5, 10 years, consistently. So the fact that now José Antonio Ramakgopa is saying, oh, it's within touching distance, I'm just not convinced. I'm not convinced by that. So you're telling me that all of the country's energy experts, all, were all wrong in their predictions that this is going to be continuing for the next 10 years. It can't possibly be, because who's got the agenda here? Is it a bunch of independent energy experts? No. Or is it a minister in the presidency for electricity, Dr. José Antonio Ramón? But I'm not convinced by it. Let's see. Listen, I'd love for the situation. I'd love for people to be able to call me out come 30 May, or even come 6 weeks' time, 6 months' time, a year's time, and say, ah, you've got egg in your face, Magwala. But I don't think that's going to happen. We need to move on. Where are we going next? Oh, the post office. Now, in light of you going to be doing this story, Graham, I've been asking people this morning, when was the last time they used the SA post office and what for? Mine was probably a year, maybe even 2 years ago. I had to send some books somewhere. I try and avoid as much as possible, which isn't difficult because I can't find a bloody post office. So what is the future looking like for SAPO?
As you know, I've been spending some of my time here in the UK recently, SJ, and I actually saw a human being put a letter inside one of
It's
those
wild,
like sort
isn't
of
it?
big red
That
post
big red thing.
boxes in the
I know,
UK,
it's lovely, isn't it?
and she was almost hugged by her friend standing with her, as if, you know, they had achieved some miracle by putting this letter into said post box. And I was like, What? That is just the strangest thing, which I haven't seen since my childhood, right? And we have been speaking about the fate of the South African Post Office for the longest time. I've been in Parliament once upon a time, as a much younger reporter, even doing the stories about bailouts. Whilst, for a parastatal, a state-owned entity like Eskom, it's going to achieve headlines most of the time. It feels like the Post Office has been sort of like the story that's sort of less, it's received less publicity over the years. It hasn't received the same sort of treatment that something like Eskom would, because let's face it, Eskom, it means the livelihood of the economy, whereas the post office, to a much lesser degree. But it is such an integral service, and it is a place that many people work at. And now the latest is that on Workers' Day, the temporary employer relief scheme, otherwise known as TERS, that request to kind of halt the planned shedding of some 5,000 jobs, that request has now essentially been dismissed. And so COSATU, the Trade Union Federation, it's now threatening strike action to happen. I'm not entirely sure when. There's no date given. However, it's COSATU saying the rejection of this application will ultimately mean the demise of the post office will be sped up, and it won't survive after so many retrenchments. I mean, more than 5,000 workers are now have been let go since the beginning of the year. More job cuts are expected, around 6,000, I think it is. And so, COSATU says it's not going to work with the UIF to be able to offset the loss of those jobs. What does it sort of mean going ahead? Well, there is, of course, a business rescue plan. Just to bring you up to speed, Esther, very quickly with what that is, the business rescue plan looks like. They essentially want to reduce the annual employee cost by around 1.2 billion rand. And that would obviously mean the retrenchment of about 6,000 of the staff complement. Essentially, they want to just reduce the branch network to around 600 branches. That's what they're going to be sort of left with. And now they're in talks with government to unlock the second half of this 3.8 billion rand funding tranche that has been made available to the post office, because ultimately they want to go sort of wholly digital, right? They quote unquote want to be focusing on improving service delivery levels. They want new digital projects to be implemented. And so they want to repurpose the post office, so to speak, to expand its services through hybrid mail extensions, motor license desk solutions that'll be done online, and property rentals or sales of owned property, and the creation of a digital hub, so to speak. So one big hub for inclusive communications for the South African Post Office. Whether or not, or why haven't we seen this yet, given that it's 2024, is your guess is as good as mine. But yeah, government has really, really dragged its feet with the question of the South African Post Office for many, many years. And I actually failed to see what its end product will eventually look like. For so many people in South Africa that are impoverished, they still see, for example, the post office as being a physical center, if you will.
Yeah, listen,
If
we
that's the
can,
going
but
to get yours.
hope.
So you can
Yeah,
get
for
your
sure.
SASSA money, but yeah, it's supposed to be a physical construct for people to be able to get their basket of services, SJ. Let's
Yeah.
hope that that digital solution will be sort of accessible.
You've got 30 seconds to tell me about an orangutan.
There was this orangutan, right? I don't know if you've seen it. You can go and check it up online. It's such a crazy story. Scientists have been sort of like scratching their heads about this. This orangutan was basically spotted, with a huge gaping hole on its face, SJ, in Indonesia, sitting in a canopy of trees. And these scientists observed the orangutan busy eating a medicinal plant and then taking its spit from its mouth and then using basically as a salve on its face, as to treat the medicinal injury. That this is the first time that this has been seen. The orangutan is nicknamed Rakus, and this was seen at the Gunung Leuser National Park in Indonesia. And scientists are they've never seen this before. The particular leaves in question, they're called Fibraria tinctoria, and apparently have some medicinal value. The question now being, though, SJ, is whether or not that was intentional for the orangutan to do that, whether or not it knows that that plant specifically has medicinal values and therefore sees that it needs to do that.
I think it does.
Whether or not it was just a coincidence.
I think it does.
I think it is. I think animals are way more intelligent than...
Way more. It's not even a question to me. Not a zoologist, but that just seems like completely obvious. They are creatures that are however many years old. Of course, they've worked out that certain plant, in the same way, surely, that they've worked out, well, I'd better not eat that plant because it's poisonous, and if I eat that, I'm going to die.
Absolutely.
It seems a bit of a no-brainer to me. It's lovely, though. I'm loving the footage. Roby. Roby, there we are. Thank you very much indeed. Much appreciated. We'll chat to you again next week.